You are about to enter the X-Files Diaries. Broadcasting from a chicken factory in Dudley, Arkansas. Here are special agents Charlie, Nick, and Annie.
Welcome, everybody, to the X-Files Diaries. I am one of your hosts, Nick Lo Cicero, and I am joined by my friends Charlie and Annie. And we are here for the second ever, kind of, episode of the X-Files Diaries, which is...
second or first, depending on
how you look at it, what order you're listening to. Yes, it's crazy. But thank you for joining us, and we are here to talk everything X-Files, but mainly get us up to speed and get us going for get us excited and ready for season 10 of the X-Files. And in our first episode, if you haven't heard it yet, you can jump back and listen to it. It's kind of our primer for season 10. Kind of taking you up and letting you know everything you may need to know, or maybe not even need to know, to get into season 10 of the X-Files for fans and newbies and the like. So it's definitely something to check out. But in this episode right here, we're going to bring you down our 10 favorite episodes all time of the X-Files. So did it take you guys a long time to come up with these lists?
No.
No, I think Annie, you just have this list in your head. It's like a ever rotating thing,
well,
isn't it?
It wasn't really in my head. I had to look at the list, but once I skimmed the list, it literally took me 2 minutes to put this list together. It wasn't hard for me.
See, now Annie's our X-Files aficionado. She's our encyclopedia of X-Files. Anything we need to know, we go to her. Charlie and I are just like fans of the show, and like so it's like when we came up with our list, like Annie, like I could give like a 5-word description of an episode, and Annie will give me the title, the season, and the episode date.
And I could do my best. I don't know if I could guarantee that, but a lot of episodes. Although I'm pretty impressed lately with Charlie's, some of his texts where he remembers some of these random episodes that I was like, whoa, okay, you do remember some of this stuff.
And that's the thing, is like my list is top 10 / ones I remember.
That's a good point. I mean, a lot of them, like when I'll rewatch sometimes, I mean, I know them really well. I've watched the whole season several times, all of it, the whole series. But like some of them, I'll be like, oh, I forgot about this one. This one was actually really good. So it was it's not hard to make this list, but it's hard to like pick 10 when you really want to pick like 20 or 30. Like there's so many more that could go on this list. But
what I had to do was go to Google and type in like a little description of the episode, because I had no idea what they were called. I just knew.
Did that work?
A degree, yeah. If you type
that's
in,
how I got it.
Yeah,
I went X-Files episode, and then like time travel or moss, or you know, like little things, and it would pop up. And be like, yep, that's the right
For
one.
For example, like creepy guy in the toilets was
the host.
That, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I told you could have just asked me. I'm quicker than Google. Yeah.
Oh boy. So we're going to go along with our lists here, but if you guys want to play along, start a discussion online, we are the X-Files Diaries on Facebook, and is it the X-Files Diaries on Twitter? I should have wrote that down.
No. X-Files Diaries.
Oh,
just
you're right.
X-Files Diaries at X-Files Diaries on Twitter as well. And we're the X-Files Diaries, of course, on iTunes. If you haven't subscribed yet, head over there.
If you have your top 10 or top 5 list, go to the, like, we'll put up this episode, a link to this episode on Facebook, and then comment on that post with the link to the episode with your top 5.
And we already have some responses online, which we'll give you some of our listener picks towards the end of the show. And the other thing I wanted to get out of the way at the beginning, if you're going to be listening to us as we go through season 10, we're going to put out a review episode of each of the episodes of X-Files that come out. For the first one, I guess they're doing back-to-back nights. We're just going to have one episode covering both those the first two episodes of season 10, and we plan on releasing our the X-Files Diaries every Wednesday. So just something to look forward to
because it's going to be airing Monday nights. Correct.
Yeah, it's going to be airing Monday nights. We'll record on Tuesdays, guys, and then we'll put it out there on Wednesday for everybody.
I just wanted to put that out there for everybody because I was confused too as to when the show was actually airing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I guess they're airing the first one to on the heels of the football games.
Well, I think it's a combination of the football game and sort of a harken back to sort of the, because Sundays used to be their day for a long time.
Charlie, just a warning, if we have a Cardinals Patriots Super Bowl, you're not going to want to be around us. Oh, it could get ugly. Yeah.
I'm really pulling for that, Nick, because like, when would that ever happen in the entire, that would not happen. Like, I mean, if that happened, it would be like,
it's all up to the Cardinals. The Patriots are there every other year.
Well,
Oh, wow.
I'm hoping that the Broncos kick your guys' ass. I really, really am.
Well, so who's playing with full balls? That's what I want to know.
All right, guys, you ready to get in our top 10 list?
Yeah.
Who goes first?
Let the unexperts go first, so we can. Yeah. All right. We can have something to say about it.
I will go first then.
Okay.
I'm actually going with the one I kind of teased right up at the top. I'm going with the host. Second episode of the second season. And, you know, this one just always stood out for me. You know, I can't really honestly remember too much watching The X-Files. Like, I don't know if I ever watched, like, the original run every episode of season one of The X-Files. But this one I remember in season two. This is what really, like grabbed me. It scared the hell out of me. And, like, I didn't want to sit on toilets. I was afraid of the sewage system. I like this one just scared the heck out of me, and it was. I don't think it was the first one that scared me this bad, but it was the one that really grabbed me. And like Charlie kind of said, my list, since I've only, you know, the first few seasons I've watched a few times each, but it's kind of like what really just sticks in my head. These might not be the greatest episodes. And I think most of mine are Monsters of the Week episodes on my list.
Well, but these are personal episodes. And no one's asking you to rank them in order of critical appraise.
Well, see, and that's why I rank Return of the Jedi over Empire. But that's for a different podcast.
We're not talking about that. That's terrible. But no, that monster, though, you're right, is very scary.
And the monster is such a good monster, isn't
he? He's great. Great.
He's just he was designed so well. Like, I remember him looking so well, and since doing this, I was looking up pictures of him. I mean, the makeup is so good, like the costuming for that one.
Well, it looks like one of those like little parasite worms that would attach itself to you. Like, if that were to become a man, that's what it would look like.
Yeah, it totally
it's so
does.
Gross.
Totally does.
Did you know a little bit of trivia that writer Darren Morgan was actually in the host costume?
No,
in that episode.
Really?
Yep.
That's cool. No.
And I think that was before he wrote any episodes, because his brother, I believe, is Glenn Morgan.
Yeah.
And he was a writer on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how they got to know him. I could have that wrong, but I know that it was Darren Morgan in the suit.
Well, the part I remember reading kind of behind the scenes was Chris Carter said he was inspired to write this episode based on his dog having worms.
Oh, God.
So, I don't know. Anyway, so that's my pick for number 10.
Okay. My number 10 is DPO, which also is the earliest episode that I have on my top 10 list.
Really?
And yeah. and one of these, it's a great episode. Jack Black, Giovanni Ribisi, before they were Jack Black, and you know what I mean? It's crazy. One day we'll have to talk about cameos. I think that's actually going to be one of my hashtags, games of the week, later this week is who's your favorite cameo in an X-Files episode. Cause X-Files got a lot of good cameos from people that were known, but also lots of like people before they were known.
Yeah.
You go back and you're like, oh my gosh, that.
I remember I'd be showing my husband these episodes recently. We'd just be watching some old ones to get prepped, and he would be like, oh, that dude's in this? And I'd be like, yeah. I mean, there's so many people.
Yeah.
They have doing this. I found out Dave Grohl was in one of the ones that I picked.
He was just he was just very, very, very brief, like it was like walk on. But I know what you're talking about. But I remember, yeah, going back to Charlie DPO, that's a really, it's a good one. And it's not as funny as you would think it would be with those guys in it.
No. They're playing pretty serious.
Yeah, it's cool. I wouldn't consider it one of the comedy episodes, which is interesting.
No. But I do. It's one of the ones that definitely sticks out in my mind. And it also kind of, if you ever saw Chronicle, did you ever watch the movie Chronicle?
Yes.
It feels very much like that, because it's sort of like these guys get these this guy gets this power, and then it's sort of that weird like battle between being like, okay, he was ostracized, so he wants to try to get back at people, and where does your mind go, and if you suddenly have power and you were sort of like the nerd, do you then just go crazy with it, or are you able to control it a little bit?
Right. Yeah, that is a good comparison, because I remember that movie.
Yeah. I like this episode. Well, like I said, it was one of those. There are definitely episodes that I remembered and then was like, no, that was a bad one. So it's not, these aren't just the 10 that I remember. It's the 10 that I remember and remember actually enjoying as we went through them.
Cool.
Do you remember what season that was in?
Three.
Yep.
Three.
Yeah. Season 3, episode 3. Did I not say that? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Season 3, episode 3.
I am really bad. I didn't write down the episode numbers, but I can Google it as we do it. Even though I told you that I would know them, I don't know all the episode numbers. It's all good. Okay, well, my number 10, I had to put one mythology episode. This is the only mythology episode in my entire list.
Wow.
it's funny. It's Requiem. It's the season finale of season 7. And it's like, I just think it's a really good, well done mythology episode. Like, honestly, I think somebody could watch it who has never seen an episode of The X-Files and go, oh, okay, I get what this show's about. Because it's the one, I don't know if you guys, I think I made you guys watch that.
Yes. It's the one that ends up with Mulder going into the
Mulder gets
UFO.
Abducted, and then you find out Scully's pregnant, and it's like a crazy, like, kind of soap opera-y ending. But like, I think it's really great. Like, I love that they go back to Oregon, because that's where the whole thing started. And you see some of these like returned abductees that we haven't seen in years, you know? And then it also starts the whole Billy Miles thing that goes on for like two more seasons. but most importantly, Mulder and Scully are both looking great. And there's like one of my favorite, I gotta say, shippy, I have to use the word shippy scenes in this entire series is in this episode when Scully she goes to Mulder's room because she's feeling sick. And like later we find out it's because she's pregnant, but we don't know that at the time. And then he just kind of like, okay, get into bed with me. And everyone's like, what? What's happening? She's getting into bed with him. It was just like, it was so shocking. And it was just a very sweet moment and a very comfortable moment between the two of them that it was just another cool hint that, okay, there's something else going on here that they're just not showing us. And those were the moments through the whole show that I thought were so great, because they didn't give you too much of it. They didn't want to push it in your face, which they shouldn't have, because it would have ruined their relationship. But they gave you like a little bit of tidbit here and there that made you think, okay, this is probably right around the time where something was changing in their relationship. So I liked that. And I also liked that they brought back Krychek, Smoking Man, Marita, Corvubius, the Lone Gunman. Like, everybody's in this episode. It's just a really good one. Good all around mythology episode.
Yeah. I know I appreciated it. Did they know they were getting renewed at this time? Or?
I don't know for sure. I know that, like, I'm pretty sure they knew Mulder was done. No matter what, like, Mulder was done. So, I mean, it could have, in theory, been the It could have been the last episode of the series, which would have been kind of crazy, because that would have been a crazy cliffhanger to end on.
Well, yeah, no, and that makes me think that it isn't. Like, there are parts of it that feel like the end of the series, but then it's like, no, but they wouldn't have included the pregnant thing. There's a lot of things that it sounds like they probably knew. They just knew they were going on without Mulder, so they made it the end of Mulder's part of the series, kind of.
It seems like that's the way they decided to write him out, because they knew he was going to be gone.
Yeah.
So, makes sense to me.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I'm actually reading some stuff from Chris Carter here about that one, and he wanted to it was all just in case because he didn't even necessarily know there'd be another season, but they did know Duchovny didn't want to come back for season 8.
Right,
they knew no matter what he was, they weren't going to have him.
Wow.
So. It does also has a special place in my heart, because I feel like that is literally the last episode where it felt like real X-Files. Like, after that, even when Mulder came back periodically, it just didn't feel right anymore.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. It got strange. It got weird. I mean, we talked about in that about that on that first episode. There are characters that apparently there's that one. Reyes is a major character, and I don't remember her at all.
Yeah, I think she popped up once or twice in season 8, and then she was in the entirety of season 9.
That would explain.
But, you know, at that point, it was just the thrill was gone, you know?
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
So is it kind of an ironic ending, too? If he's searching for the truth, he found it by being abducted.
Right. I mean,
in a
I guess,
weird way.
But Mulder's seen UFOs and aliens the entire series. So it's not like this is new to him. I mean, obviously getting abducted
was new. So he's
less
looking for proof than the truth.
Yeah. And I mean, part of him thought, I don't know. Every time I watch that episode, I'm like, what is he thinking? Like he's clearly walking towards that ship with purpose. Like he wants to do it. But then he gets there and he sees the bounty hunter and he realizes, oh, shit, this is probably not a good idea. Like you can see that look on his face, but it's too late. So I think part of me thinks that like maybe he was intrigued. He wanted to go, like he totally, maybe I'll find my sister. Yeah, he gave up on the sister thing already, huh?
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll, you know, maybe I'll learn something. Maybe I'll find the truth, like you said. But then I think quickly, and as we find out next season, it was not a good decision.
All right. I'm going to go with my number 9 here. And I'm going with the 7th episode of season 3 titled The Pusher. Pusher, yes. I always put the before things, and Andy does
you do.
Not like that.
Well, because you say I work on The Family Guy. And yes. I'm like, okay, Nick, we've known each other a long time now. Well, it's Family Guy. Yes.
It is Family Guy. And this
but
is Pusher.
That's a good one.
It is a good one. You know, I like this one because I always liked that idea of... The like he pushed people around basically with his mind. He was able to make people's change people's wills and or bend to his will and things like that. And I think right in the end, if I'm remembering this like completely correctly, it was because he had a brain tumor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember really being fascinated by that because like that seems real enough and
possible.
I always liked episodes like that there's just that tinge of reality that like maybe that's a thing, maybe like because I am one of those people that believe in that. I don't know what's necessarily proven and stuff, and I think this concept is brought up time and time again actually in this show. It certainly is where we're not using our full brain, and part of what X-Files explores is, well, maybe that's the hidden alien stuff.
Right. Or, hey, what would happen if this guy could use this part of his brain? I think the X-Files is at its best when it's doing stuff like that's realistic or could be realistic.
This all coming from the guy who never saw Fringe. Yeah. Which at the start was supposed to was sort of hailed as, hey, we are like the X-Files, only we're basing our stuff in at like more based in reality than anything else.
Never liked that show.
Me neither. I tried it.
Yeah.
It starts off really horrible. The whole channeling her ex-husband kind of thing. But after like 6 or 7 episodes, they were like, nope, that's stupid. And then it's great from beyond that.
But apparently there's a whole like 6 degrees of Fringe thing going on with Charlie. Because every topic on anything that we could ever talk about in our lives, somehow he gets us back to, hey, on Fringe once, this happened.
Well, that's... Fringe did a great job of showing parallel universes and making, you know, making people understand that. It's really helping with Flash right now, because in Flash there are multiple universes where actors are playing multiple parts on different worlds, kind of, you know, and Fringe was a great way of looking at that. So my number 9 is Kill Switch, which is the 11th episode of season 5.
Nice, interesting pick.
This is the virtual reality one where at one point, I think Mulder is stuck in this virtual reality and he's got to realize he's in the virtual reality so he can get like sucked out of it, kind of.
Well, he's like an amputee, like he's lost his arms and his legs and stuff. And I remember that. And I remember there's a scene where Scully like beats up a nurse.
Yeah. And that was inside the AI.
Yeah.
And that was all like animated and stuff, and they got, you know, high claims, you know, high accolades for that stuff. And yeah, it's really cool. It's interesting. And I think Mulder realizes it one time because like, I think it's something weird. Like Scully like kisses him or something weird like that, and he goes, wait, this isn't real life, and that's what like kind of kicks him, so he knows that he's in the and it's cool because it harkens on the Matrix before the Matrix, I think, and some other things, and it's really cool. It was actually written by William Gibson and Tom Maddox, who both of which are authors that deal with science fiction and computer science fiction. William Gibson wrote Neuromancer, which is probably his most popular novel. So some guest writers, some fun ideas, and I really enjoyed it. And it's another one where it ends and you realize that it's probably not completely dead. It's just been changed a little bit or something.
How the X-Files usually ends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How the good ones end.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember that one, but not super well.
I was just going to say, he keeps bringing up ones that, like, I forgot about. Like, both of these that Charlie has brought up are ones I forgot about, but now I remember really enjoying.
No, that's good. That's going to make these lists a lot more interesting. Yeah.
Right. We should tell everybody listening that we don't know, well, for the most part, what's on each other's lists, at least in what order. I mean, I don't really know what's on your guys' list, so...
Well, and I also think that the top end of our list, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, probably are going to be nice and fun and different. So
yeah, those are the crazy picks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, my 9, we talked about last week, so if you want to hear more about it, you can listen to last week's episode. But it's The Unnatural. It's season 6. God, I don't have the number. Maybe one of you guys can look it up. It's near the end of the season. It's the one with the baseball.
19.
There we go. Jesse L. Martin is like the main character. It's a David Duchovny written and directed episode. Yeah. And it's just a really great all around episode. I love it. I talked about this a little bit last week, but it's about one of the colonists who decided he wanted to stay on Earth because he fell in love with baseball. But the show, you know, it isn't really about baseball. It's just kind of how it takes place around it. And Jesse L. Martin's great in it. It's got some really cute Mulder and Scully scenes, the front and back. He kind of gave Scully some time off because she wasn't in this episode very much, but the two scenes that she was in were great. So, but yeah, that's another one. Another great, great episode.
I want that one on my list. Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah.
That's such good. I recently just watched that because I was kind of like, before you made me kind of skip ahead to watch the important episodes in like 7, 8, and 9.
Yeah.
I was on season 6 of my little rewatch, and so yeah, it's one I just recently watched, and
it's one of those ones you forget about it, or you go, oh, I kind of remember that one, but then when you rewatch it, you're like, oh yeah, this was really, really well done, just really well done episode.
Yeah, because there's like also the whole racism element to it.
Yes,
which is pretty powerful in it too.
Yeah, the only X-Files episode that they actually say the N-word on, I think twice.
Wow, yeah.
Which, I don't know if they bleeped it on the actual air, but it's on the DVD.
You're right. Yeah, it's on the copy that I had, too. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I didn't even know that they could say that on network TV. But
they did a lot of things, I think, that...
Well, it was 20 years ago, too, so things have...
Well, no, I mean, I think they did a lot of things that kind of pushed. I mean, you know, obviously...
They definitely did.
You just mean the X-Files in general did a lot of... Yeah.
Right.
Well, look at it now, and it seems tame, but when you think about the time and the, you know, the environment that it was released in, that you go, wow, some of this stuff is pretty pretty crazy.
All right. For number 8, I'm already going to cheat because I'm picking 2 episodes because it's a two-parter.
I have one two-parter on mine, too, so
okay,
it's not a cheat.
Good. right there, season 6, and I think this one made my list because it's one I just watched and I just loved it. Dreamland, episodes 4 and 5. So Dreamland and Dreamland 2.
That's on mine too, but it's higher up.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's is this the one? Is this the two parter that you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this one was amazing. It really is. It's where Mulder like switches bodies with the guy Morris from Area 51. Yes, Michael
McKean.
Love him. Great, great actor. He's on, what was he on? I forgot the... Anyway, you've seen him in a lot of things. And he guest stars on a lot of things as well. Really, really fun actor.
He's on a lot of those Christopher Guest
movies. Okay. And he's the perfect guy for this role. Like, I love the way... He, you know, when he portrayed Mulder and things like that. It was just a wonderful, like, it was just
like how easily
really
he falls
episode.
Into it. Like, he's like, hey, this is my life now.
Yeah, I like that they took that twist with it, that he wasn't freaking out about it.
He wasn't trying to get out of it. Like, Mulder was the one who's like, I want to get back to my life.
And it probably had one of the funniest, at least in my eyes, one of the funniest scenes in X-Files, where he was trying to seduce Scully. And Scully, you know, handcuffed them to the bed. And he was like, okay.
Well, and you know, that was just one of the moments, too, that even Charlie was talking about earlier, that she knows him so well that that's the moment she's like, you're not Mulder. Like, that's the moment she figures it out, which I love.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's another great episode. I don't know if it's on anybody's list, but there's multiple times where they sort of tease the shippers by almost getting them together, but it's not really Mulder. It's somebody else pretending to be Mulder, or it's not even Mulder's, you know, it's Mulder's body, but it's not him in it.
I think you're thinking of the episode Small Potatoes.
Yes.
Which is another great one. But
and it's just it's a theme that has been done, I guess, you know, in terms of other TV shows or movies and things like that. But just their spin on this whole idea worked really, really well. So
And it was a great two-parter, too. I mean, a lot of it, they couldn't have done it in 1 hour. Like, there was...
No.
I loved the scene, too. This is so random, but there was a great part where you see, you know, how the UFO would pass over and then people would, like, get merged.
Yes.
There was like, there was a scene where like a Marine got switched bodies with like an old Indian woman.
Yes.
And I love that when she's like speaking like the Marine, and the Marine is speaking like her, but like that woman who played her was so great.
Perfect.
Because
he
calls her like Top Gun Grandma, will you shut the hell up? Which probably is one of my favorite lines in the entire series.
And you know what? And I'm glad you kind of brought other things up, because like there were actually good effects for a TV show in the 90s.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, the special effects of like the merging the people and such in this episode were so good. There was a guy stuck in a rock, and then the two, the couple twisted up together. It was done really, really well.
You have to remember, season 6 is basically the beginning of the slow downward trend for the show. And so they're at the peak of, they're coming off the movie. They're at the peak of like popularity. So they've got probably as much money as they're ever going to get probably at that point.
That's a good point. That's probably their highest budget. I also like too, in that episode, that they, another just so X-Filesy, everything goes back to normal. And yet somehow the waterbed remains in Mulder's apartment, and the dime and the nickel, or whatever it is, a dime and a penny that are merged together. Scully has that later. She pulls it out and looks at it in like a season 9 episode that I'm like, oh, that was a cool little callback. And, you know, they still never explain how those still existed, but I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. No, it's good. What's also interesting is all that stuff, and it's not a mythology episode, because it doesn't technically have to do with the bigger conspiracies.
I mean, I consider it like, if there were a third category, if there were mythology and Monster of the Week, and then there were the third category that were Monster of the Week, but they kind of teeter on the edge of mythology, because it does have to do with, you know, aliens and the Roswell crash and all that stuff. So it's kind of, but you don't need to watch it at all to follow the mythology.
Yeah. No, there's definitely I think that we're also going to see a lot of season 6 episodes on our lists. Because I feel like season 6, they did a lot of crazy things, but they weren't too crazy. And they had sort of been through enough Monster of the Week seasons that they were like, okay, this is what we're really good at, as opposed to another one where they're like, you know, earlier they're like, well, we're going to try the invisible animals that the aliens are working on.
Exactly. This
one
just had a lot of great one-offs, so they're going to be on lots of people's favorite lists.
A weird quick tangent, because in looking at these, I see like numbers associated with them, like the ratings and millions of years. It looks like it's funny, because I think these numbers are higher than you would see these days, because there were less TV channels back then.
Definitely.
It's kind of funny. There's like more people watching individual shows just because there's less channels to split up your attention, and less DVR.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Or no DVR. I don't know. I guess that.
When this show started, it basically stayed at a... I mean, it was a little lower in the first two seasons.
Right.
It was hovering in the mid-teens, and then it finally peaked at like 20 million.
Yeah, no, I don't even necessarily mean for this show. It
was these just... days, even at season one numbers, would be like more than anything's ever gotten.
It is. It's hard to kind of gauge that.
Yeah. No. Totally. So I'll go on to mine. Number 8 is Field Trip, which is season 6, episode 21. That's the one that I was talking about. Another sort of like Kill Switch, where they've kind of got this alternate reality thing going on, because it's about this moss that will, like, people lie down and then the moss exudes some kind of pheromones or psychotropic drug that then makes the people hallucinate, and they hallucinate so long that the moss is able to, like, basically decompose them.
Like digest them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the hallucination creates this world that they live in. So it's sort of like the Matrix in that aspect too.
Well, yeah, and it's also like it could, another one that could really maybe happen, because most of it's just a hallucination.
Yeah, exactly. And it's another one of those where Fox and Scully both fall into it. You know what I mean? Like they do it, and they both have their own dreams, and it's just, it's really neat. And it gives you a chance to explore things without having it to be, you know, another one of those, you know, you get a lot of like potential shippiness stuff in it, but you don't have to worry about it because you erase it by the end of the episode because it was all hallucinations.
Yeah. There was also a moment too where he's, you know, he brings an alien home as part of the hallucination, and she sees it and then suddenly starts to buy it and be like, oh, you were right about everything. You were right about this. This must have been this. And then he's like, something's wrong here. I can't believe you're buying this. And like, that was kind of how it helped him snap him out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I really like this episode. And it's just, like I said, one of the ones that reminds me of the show. And it's one that I remember well. The other interesting thing is the bodies that they find at the beginning are sort of like hugging each other. That was the other weird thing, is the hallucinations always sort of also like focus on like love. And so the people are always sort of like, they find them hugging each other and like spooning or like, you know, cuddling up, which was an interesting thing. It's also interesting because I noticed this when we watched the season finale, the series finale of the show, Fox and Scully end up, Mulder and Scully end up in that pose at the very last shot of the whole thing.
It's to the point where it was either intentional, or if it wasn't intentional, it's freaky.
Yeah.
I actually did a screenshot of that because we were talking about it, so I'll tweet that out later.
Yeah, it's crazy, and we had a conversation that maybe everything since this episode has just been completely made up and they didn't actually get out, because there's always those episodes where you think you've gotten out of the VR, but it's actually pretending to let you out, so that way you think you're out, but you're still inside it. No, so maybe the whole rest of the show was inside this, and it's just more of that in the dying moments sort of Owl Creek Bridge sort of thing.
My theory was, though, they died after the screen faded to black in the final episode. They were nuked by the same guys who nuked the Navajo village.
They were missiles.
The smoking man, like, the way they showed him, he lit up like he was on fire, like he was being nuked.
Putting to rest that theory, that didn't happen. And to put to rest Charlie's theory.
But the only reason it didn't happen is because we're getting a season 10.
And a movie. We got a second movie, so clearly.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's true.
Come on now. And to put the kibosh on Charlie's theory, is that couple, it wasn't Mulder and Scully, it was the other couple.
No, I know that. But I think that's part of the ooze. You know what I mean? Like one of the cool things about the ooze was, not only did it create this weird reality, but it always pushed couples together.
Right,
in
so
that
you're saying,
reality.
Like, in theory, that would have happened to them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I don't like stories that say everything is a dream. So I'm gonna ignore it. But it's a good theory.
No. Yeah. No. And actually, several of mine, I guess, aren't they? but it's interesting.
Lost was all a dream, wasn't it?
Don't even start. Don't even start. You know better than that. Don't.
That's like just saying like Empire is the worst. Like you're just, that's crazy talk. Just, you know, stop with the crazy talk. Anyway, my number 8. This one's probably on both of your lists, but I bet you it's higher up for you. Postmodern Prometheus. This is season 5, episode 5, and this is the one with the kind of Frankenstein monster who's basically trying to create a mate for himself. I don't know. I always get so weirded out by what is essentially like a rape story. Like, I guess they've said later that, oh, well, he didn't really actually have sex with them. He was kind of, I don't know what he was doing in the house for 3 days with Cher playing. I don't know what he was doing. I don't want to think about it, but you know, let's just go past that part of this and say, other than that, it's a really kind of cool, interesting story and a really well-directed episode. It's the black and white one, as people remember. Just a really nice, cool story. Just a classic X-Files monster story. I think it's great.
It was at one point when we were talking about it earlier the week, but I completely already forgot about it. So it's not on my list.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, fair enough.
I love that one, but I'll be honest. Like, I tried to put some on here that maybe we kind of forgot about. Yeah, I think that one's an easy one to put on the top 10 list, but I think I almost feel like I would only be putting that on there because I feel like I'm supposed to. Because I understand, but there are other ones that came to mind that I'm like, no, I actually think I enjoyed these better. Although, again, that might be there's no doubt that that's a very good episode.
Yeah, fair enough, because I actually had the same feeling when I was kind of narrowing down my list.
Yeah.
It was between that and like another couple, and I was like, well, I can't not put that on my list. That's how it happened.
Yeah, I understand that, but I decided that I just wouldn't put that one on my list. Everybody kind of knows that one too, so
that's how it ended up on my list earlier in the week, actually, too. Because I'm like, I know I like this one, and I know it was really awesome, but I can't remember anything of it other than the black and white part. Like,
well, yeah, once again, give it another try, because
I think we need to. Yeah, yeah.
It's really good.
It's one of those that stands out for sure, because it's a very memorable episode, and it's shot so well. It's fun to watch.
Another one that was aired in Letterboxd. I think that and Triangle might have been the only two that were aired in Letterbox, at least until they moved the format to widescreen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, does Small Potatoes bother you for the same sort of sex with other people kind of thing?
Wait, how so?
Because he...
Oh, the rape? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's creepy, right?
It is. No, it is. It is. Yeah, no, I'm not...
I think what's so funny to me, and it's not funny. I mean, I don't want to talk about, like, it's the X-Files. They're not trying to make some sort of statement about rape, but I feel like all of the episodes that have to do with some sort of rape plot is like, it's a comedy episode. You know, it's like supposed to be kind of like a funny episode. And I'm like, okay, it's funny, except for the rape. Like,
yeah, yeah. Well, I think that attention to that in the last two decades has sort of changed.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I mean, you know, yeah, that's like part of the reason, like, as much as I love parts of Small Potatoes, it's part of the reason why I can't really like put that on my favorites list. I just kind of have a guttural reaction to that one.
No, totally. I think it's not on my list either. I don't think it's on Nick's, is it?
Which one? The one she...
Small Potatoes.
No.
Okay. The best parts they make our Luke Skywalker reference.
Yeah.
And then the end when...
He's trying to seduce Scully.
Scully, yeah, exactly.
And she's kind of going for it. That's what's the funny thing is, like, she doesn't really kind of clue. She seems to be kind of like, well, this is a little weird, but okay, maybe. And she doesn't really get what's happening until Mulder, like, the real Mulder busts into the room, and then she's like, oh, whoops.
Yeah, yeah. that and it's a really... The ending is one of those nice, like, oh, you thought it was over, but wait, there's 5 more minutes of the show. What's going on?
Right. Kind of thing. Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, Engine. Good.
It's worth talking about. It is a good episode. Yeah. Anyway, so any more thoughts on Postmodern Prometheus?
No. I think so. But I think so. I'm on number 7, I believe.
Yep.
Yes.
7. All right. Number 7, I'm going with Ice, 8th episode of first season.
Yeah.
And I guess if I'm not mistaken, this was kind of the first one, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was before that, but like it really implanted the idea of the big government conspiracy with aliens and things like that. It just like kind of got the ball rolling, I guess, on that.
This was kind of, this was a monster of the week.
Yeah,
I know, but there was also that I did that idea of the government knowing about these things, right?
If I'm you could be right. If that's true, it's probably a small part of it. I'm just calling.
That's what I'm kind of. Yeah, I know. I guess this one's not necessarily considered a mythology thing because I don't think it connects any dots along the timeline. But to me, it kind of
just plays into that fear.
The fear, the skepticism of the government and things like that. But it was just really. I think it was really. It was a really creepy episode. It was fun to watch. It was. It was just one of the more memorable ones. It was probably the one. I don't know. It was like I honestly don't really. I didn't really remember much of season one, but I do remember this being like probably one of the first episodes I ever watched.
Right,
and it hooked me right away because I don't think The X-Files was one of those that I like. Remember watching like the series premiere of and stuff like that. I think it's just the show I found. People were talking about it and decided to check it out. And this seems like the first episode I watched and it really hooked me.
I think there's a lot of this where it's one of the first, it's a big episode. It feels very much movie-like for a TV show.
Yeah.
It's all of that stuff way early in that first season. Before people were even watching it, really.
I think the thing that stood out is it's different than any other television I watched before. And I think that's what stood out to me.
This is definitely one of the greatest, I don't think anyone would argue, of season one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so as a starting mark for the show, definitely. And we've had the conversation on the last episode, we had the conversation about how, like, we wouldn't have TV the way it is, especially this cool, like, drama/adventure/mystery storytelling with long arcs and things like that, if it wasn't for X-Files. X-Files was the first to do a lot of that stuff. So it was different. And now you go back and you're like, what's so different about this? And you're like, well, because everything you watch now that you like is because of X-Files.
It's worth mentioning too that X-Files did this a lot. This is obviously kind of a ripoff or a play on The Thing.
Yeah.
But they don't retell that story. They do their own spin on it. And so, which is, you know, great for a show like this to, you know, they make up enough new stuff. They're like, hey, you know, let's try this thing that people love and do our own story with it. And this was a good example of that working.
Yeah, yeah. They take a lot of things and it's half homages, half like fan fic in some ways. You know, half of it is like, hey, I know this famous sci-fi story. Let me retell it in a way that I think would be kind of interesting. So it's not ripping off so much as just like being aware of the world out there and talking about it through the X-Files light, kind of.
I also remember that I remember the feeling of not necessarily knowing where this show was going to be going. So in my mind, anything could happen, even to our main characters. Not necessarily death, but like any kind of transformation, anything could happen to them, or they could do anything. So like no one was safe, even our main characters in this episode.
Right.
To me,
you worried for them.
Yeah.
You were like, okay, what's going on? Yeah. It was very tense.
Well, and there's several times where things happen and they're almost dead. I mean, one that's not on my list and I don't know the name of it, but the one where they're in the forest and those weird green things come out of a tree and start like stalk and they're like bugs, but they only attack
Darkness
when there's
falls.
Yeah. 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 That they're basically dead by the end of it. And it just luck that they made it through the night. And the sun rises kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. We're definitely playing a game sometime during our X-Files Diaries run where we throw out keywords from episodes and see how quickly Andy could guess the episode. We may have like challengers, listeners who could challenge Andy and see who could get it first.
I think we're doing that every episode and not as a game, as part of the way we talk about the show.
Just happens. I know, but at some point you're going to stump me. I mean, I'm not going to know them all, I promise. But it'll be fun to see it. It'll be fun to see it.
So for me, number 7 is season 4, episode 19, Synchrony. Synchrony. Yeah. This was really cool. This is the one where this guy is freezing people and you're like, that's pretty crazy. And then you find out he's come back in time to stop himself from creating time travel.
Yeah. I actually just watched that one the other day because mentioned it. I was like, oh, I forgot that one. And then I watched it.
Yeah, I remember. It sticks with me. It sticks with me so much that when Castle did an episode similar to that, and they did a similar thing where at the end, you don't know if it actually was the guy or not coming back from the past. That like they leave it wide open. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And maybe some of that is rubbing off on this, but I definitely remember this episode and I definitely liked the weird time travel paradoxy ideas that came up with it. And the thing that I remember the most from this, which still kind of scares me in some ways, is the idea that once something has existed, it's probably going to exist at some point. Somebody is going to come up with something. If it can become anything that can be come up with is going to be come up with at some point.
You mean
even if you could go back in time and uninvent the nuclear bomb,
right?
Like someone else would invent it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And that's actually directly related to how they created this story is they were going off the story that Oppenheimer had said to Truman, the ideas of what if Oppenheimer could go back in the past and uninvent that bomb. That's one of those things that keeps me up at night and freaks me out because it's just so crazy and weird and frightening, honestly.
Yeah, agreed. That's a cool pick.
That's a really good pick.
My number 7, this is probably the only off the wall pick on my list, but I just love this episode. It's The Rain King from season 6, episode 8.
Okay.
It's probably one of the funniest episodes. It's definitely like a comedy. It's just really well, I don't know, it's really well shot. The story, I really like the story. It's the one where the guy basically can control the weather with his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes the rain, he makes it rain, or he makes the drought and the rain and all that stuff because he's like in love with this woman and he can't tell her. So, I mean, they obviously take every opportunity that they can to kind of parallel that story with Mulder and Scully, but they don't do it in like an annoying way. They do it in just kind of like a cute way. But like, it's just really funny. Like, all the actors in it are great. Victoria Jackson, who before she became a total nutball.
That's who that is, yeah.
She's really good in it. Like, she's really funny. And like, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of, it's a little off the wall, and it's probably one of the ones that people go, what? That's lame. You know, but I love it.
No, actually, when I was scrolling through some episode names, that came up as we started talking this podcast. And I was like, ooh, maybe I should add that. And I was like, no, I have my list. I'll leave it off it. It also reminds me a lot of that Steve Martin movie where he's an evangelist and he makes stuff up based on, you know, have you ever seen that? I don't even know what it's called. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
He's like, he's a guy who's an evangelist who goes around to these towns and sets up like he does, and they have a tent and everything. And but he does, you know, everything by like probabilities, and he knows all the like facts of the most famous, not famous, but most used names for kids in all every year. So he has that to go on when he's guessing people's names and stuff. It's really. It was weird. It was strange. But for some reason, that reminds me of this show a lot, too.
Yeah. This one, I thought, too, another reason I loved it is it's an example, another opportunity for David Duchovny to show his comedic chops.
Yeah.
Not even so much. He's not like delivering jokes or anything. It's just usually it's just like a reaction or delivering a line that maybe isn't supposed to be very funny, but he'll deliver it in a funny way. Like I remember when they first get to this place. And this, like, the mayor comes out with this little girl who's got, like, she's, like, a baton girl. And she plays her little radio and she's spinning her baton. And, like, Scully's looking around, like, what is going on? And Mulder's just kind of grinning. Like, he's like, oh, this is great. Like, this is so funny. And I, like, just little moments like that. And then this episode, again, I have to talk about shippiness, has probably my very favorite shipper moment of the entire series because it's them just kind of swaying.
Oh,
I don't know if
you
guys remember this, but they're in the high school reunion. The dance, they're kind of watching this other couple, like trying to like see what they're going to do because like, you know, them getting together, like the whole episode weighs on that. And like it just cuts to them across the, and they're standing next to each other. They don't even know they're doing it, but they're just kind of swaying back and forth. And I just like, anyone out there in internet land wants to make a gif of that, I will love you forever. But like, it's like, I just love it. It's so random and fun. It's just, this is a really fun episode.
I just love how many different characters there are next. You have the guy trying to make money off the making it rain that's not really doing anything.
The secretary who's like in love with him.
Yeah. It's just,
like so stupid.
It's so stupid. It's so good. It is like a, almost like, because you mentioned, Charlie mentioned the Steve Martin movie. I mean, it seems like a spoof off an 80s comedy.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
And it's written like that. And it just shows the great writing in this show where they could do different things. Like and it's amazing they can do something different every time. Yeah, it all fits. Yeah. So like nothing seems out of place.
Leap of Faith, 1992.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you're right. I do know. I remember that. I think I did see that.
Which would make it before X-Files too.
Ah, so maybe it was kind of, maybe it did kind of harken back to that. Who knows?
Interesting. All right, Nick, number six.
All right, you're going to have to help me on the pronunciation. War of the
Oh, God, I can't do this one.
Cuprophages?
Cuprophages?
Oh, yeah.
I know.
The cockroaches.
Let's just say cockroaches.
The cockroaches. 12 episodes.
Let's not even say cockroaches because that's creepy.
12 episodes of the third season here. All right. This just has, first of all, I living in Florida, I hate cockroaches. It's disgusting. But
I think everybody hates them.
Yeah, I know. But we have, I mean, they're just huge here. They're just gigantic. Ugh. They're in your laundry. They're everywhere.
Should probably
clean the house. But that's another story. Anyway, this was cool for a number of reasons. I liked, I guess it was, I don't know if it's like misdirection or anything, but like it turns out where the cockroaches are these like little robots, and there's like speculation on like how did they get there? Where, you know, what if a race of aliens was to send down these little probes that were little cockroaches? And it's just kind of freaky. It's like, yeah. It's just something.
As a disguise.
Yeah, as a disguise. And, you know, whether anybody could actually do that in these really advanced things. And, you know, what is really around us that we don't know about? And it's it was pretty interesting. But my absolutely favorite part is the very end, where Mulder's writing out his case on what happened. And he sees a little bug crawling across his desk, and he just squashes it with the next file.
And that's just how it ends.
Yeah, that's how it ends. It's just funny. It's like the whole show is about these creatures that were, you know, harming people and doing crazy things. And then you see a bug, and in the end, you know, we're the dominant species here, and we could crush those.
I believe
bugs.
This was a Darren Morgan too, right? This was probably one of the first, I think, genuinely comedic episodes of the series. Like, I know they probably did some before then, but
you think so? Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like they, like where they were really playing with their audience. Like, I remember at a certain point during the show too, they have a fake CGI cockroach just crawl across your screen so that you think it's a real bug on your TV screen that you're watching.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that? Like it goes by so
awesome.
Quick.
Yeah.
But I remembered that from this episode thinking, oh, that was clever to do that and kind of make you think, oh, crap, do I have cockroaches in my house? Like, right. Yeah, it was just, yeah, really, really good.
I'm kind of glad I don't remember that, actually.
Well, it's kind of, it's interesting because when I looked at this, they say, they like make a reference to war. I guess this is referencing War of the Worlds and H.G. Wells in a way. At least, right. So they want to give. I think they want to give that idea of, hey, this is a real invasion, you know, and be scared by this. It's interesting, but yeah.
Because we also have the first proof for or evidence of Mulder being attracted to another female in the series with Bambi.
Yeah,
I love Scully's like Bambi. Like her name is Bambi.
The other thing
is
I will say,
Dr. Bambi or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Again,
yeah, no,
like, the effects team here. This is just the third season, so this is 96 apparently, and the effects of the cockroaches were really, really good. Like the I still think the special effects. I mean, I don't know what was real.
I think they used real cockroaches.
You think Lot was real?
Not a lot, not all of it, but I'm sure they used mostly real cockroaches.
Let's see. 300 cockroaches.
That's what they had to do.
And then
yeah, especially back then, they couldn't do it all with CGI, so they had to do it for real, which makes it better.
Yeah,
which
guess it wasn't CGI.
Not even more.
It wasn't, was it? Yeah.
That's why the CGI looked so good, Nick, because it was real.
Yeah, no, that's just really good.
Yeah, we just don't know. We don't know life without CGI.
Good cockroach trainers there.
Yeah, I think they're probably in the credits is a credit for a cockroach wrangler.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. There would have to be.
I think we're going to get a lot from season 3 also, like I said about season 6, because I know my next two are from season 3.
Hold on. Debbie Cove, the animal trainer for the X-Files.
Told
is
you.
That a real? So that is a real thing.
That is a real thing. She's the one who got 300 cockroaches for this episode.
Hang on. Mm-hmm. It's even better that it's a chick.
Only one cockroach died during filming due to old age.
How the hell do they know that? They do a cockroach autopsy.
It was 10 days old, you know, the real old.
That's ridiculous. That is really, it really says that?
Yes, it really says that.
That is awesome. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, I get the opportunity to talk about something that you probably all really want to talk about, but it's down on my list, which means that I get to say it first. And that's Clyde Brookman's Final Repose, season 3, episode 4.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah. And we've talked about, you know, it looked and I've heard rumors that one of the moments in this episode could potentially really play out as the season goes on. And that's the moment where the guy who tells them how everybody's going to die tells Scully that she doesn't die.
We should mention it's Peter Boyle and he won an Emmy for this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was amazing.
And it's another Darren Morgan.
Yeah, another Darren Morgan. He's like, all of his episodes are probably on Oliver List.
Oh, wow.
He only wrote like 4, I think.
The first one is Humbug. I don't know if anybody has Humbug in it.
It's not on my list, but I remember. Yeah, I do remember that he wrote that one, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Clyde Brookman's great. Great, 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 great.
Humbug, real quick, is the one that takes place in the Florida town for all the carny folk.
The circus folks.
The circus folks. And it's got the guy who had the puzzle pieces on him, Enigma and stuff. Yeah, so great episode. Great episode. But moving on. Yeah, Clyde Brookman's, it's basically a perfect episode almost in some ways. You know, it's creepy. It's strange, but it's entertaining. And, you know, it does what only X-Files could do, I think. And really kind of plays with everybody's understanding of what the show is, but with twisting it a little bit. And I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I will say that it was always one that I always remembered this episode, of course. I think everybody that watched the series did. But I think it moved up my rankings. Because me and Annie, like a long time ago, we didn't do a detail thing. We kind of texted back and forth the top 10 kind of thing. And I've only changed a couple things since that list because I still had that list on my computer. And this was on there, but I moved it up because after all the discussions we've had about this over the past couple of weeks, like it moved up because of the significance, I think.
Well, you appreciate it more.
Yeah. And then I watched it again recently because we were talking so much about it. And you're right. Peter Boyle's performance in this episode was everything. I mean, it was,
he played like kind of depressed, but just rolling with it, but he can still be kind of an fun guy to hang around. He just played that mix of emotions so well.
Yeah. 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 It's a great episode.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had more to say about it, but there's really, I mean, it's
And like aesthetically, like it was
you forget how good it is.
Good looking episode too.
Cinematically. Yes. I also think that it's like Nick said, you know, it's so dense in ways and you have to watch it more than once. So you have to go back and watch it. And remember, these shows weren't on during a time when DVRs were on. So they didn't have that. You know what I mean? Like a show would happen and you'd be like, yep, that was the show. Nobody went back and watched shows 5 or 6 times, but X-Files had shows where you needed to go back and watch it again. You know, as the guy, I know you've already done it, but even I, who don't go out and watch movies on a regular basis, I saw Star Wars again this week today. You know what I mean? Like, for the second time, which is, I haven't seen a movie in theaters twice for years. And X-Files were sort of like that. Like, there's stuff in X-Files episodes that you're not going to see the first time around, and you have to watch again. But it came out in a time where that's not what people did.
Right. Well, that's why I keep saying to people who always bitch about how it doesn't make any sense, like, the fact that it actually does make a semblance of sense is actually impressive for that reason.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
they didn't have to kind of meticulously remember every detail like they did with Lost, because they knew people would go back and watch over and over. In this, they didn't think anyone was going to catch this or that. They didn't think they had to worry about it or remember it. So, like, I'm continually impressed that with the job that they did do with that knowledge.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that maybe when they get into it, they understood it, but definitely season one, I don't think they could have ever possibly thought that they'd ever have to worry about any stuff.
Of course not. Like, that's, like I said, too, they, like, the real mythology, like the important stuff, doesn't even really start till season two.
Yeah.
So I have to note real quick that Clyde Bruckman, this episode is the oldest episode I have on my list. And for the reason for that is, I just can't with Scully's hair. Like, it ruins all the episodes for me. Like, I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm just like, nope, can't with the hair, can't with the shoulder pads. Poor Scully. Yep. It's not her fault. It's the 90s. But.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Well, both of them are, you kind of go into it going, I mean, like, if you didn't watch from the beginning, you kind of go, oh, yeah, these guys are sexy. I'm going to go watch them in the first season. And in the first season, they are not.
Yeah, like they are literally sexier right now than they were in the first season. That just goes to show that there's age has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was their design. I mean, they brought them out, you know what I mean? Like, I think they weren't even supposed to be sexy in the first season. You know,
that's,
like,
true. They were.
But and they sort of became their own, and they kind of worked, you know, brought that out a little bit in the show, but yeah, the first episode, Mulder and Scully are not sexy. I mean, they're attractive, and you can see that they're good looking people, but they're not, like, sexy. They're, like, clearly made up to be a little disheveled and a little like nerdy, and the kind of people that would be. Exactly.
And just real quick, I have one other quick thing to say about Clyde Bruckman. I don't think we've mentioned. There may be just as emotional episodes, but I don't think any episode is as emotional as this episode, too. Like,
I would agree with that.
It just, and the ending is a little bit unsettling, but not even in the ways some other X-Files episodes are unsettling. You know, some X-Files endings are unsettling just because, well, they don't really necessarily wrap up, or there's, you know, the bad guys are still out there, whatever. This one is just kind of unsettling. It's just like it's a little sad. It's it's emotional,
and you can tell it really affects Scully, like, specifically. Really great. We're still on number six, right? My number six.
Yep.
This is a season four episode 13, Never Again. I did mention this last week, but I just this is like this episode is so important to me that it's one that I tell people to watch when they're watching the show, because I think it goes to the very, very, very heart, mainly Scully, but to their relationship, because we're about halfway through the series here. Scully's kind of at the point where, and this is actually interesting, I should mention this. This episode, I think, was supposed to air in a different order. They aired it in a way where we didn't know that she had cancer, I believe, but it's supposed to have played right directly after she finds out she has cancer, but Mulder doesn't know yet. So, which in a way it kind of changes her thought process of what happens in this episode. But anyway, it's the one with the guy who he's like a divorcee, and he goes out and gets drunk and gets this tattoo, who talks to him, and it's Jodie Foster's voice, which is great. And I love it too, because I've been watching this episode on my headphones, and the way they do the sound is her voice is constantly like spinning around your head. So as she's talking, it goes from left to right to left to right to left to right, like during one line. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's neat.
This is a Glenn Morgan, James Wong episode, by the way. He becomes essentially like, and you can blame the tattoo, you can blame society, you can blame men. Like, I love all the different ways you can think about this, but he becomes essentially this woman hater, and he thinks every woman in the episode is out to get him. He starts to hear, like, because she's taunting him. And so he's this dangerous killer. Like, he kills a woman, and then he ends up meeting Scully, who's meanwhile, like, disillusioned with Mulder. She's just sick of doing what he says all the time. She feels like her life doesn't have any meaning. This on the heels of the whole cancer thing, which you can play into that if you want. It's really good. It's like her kind of just trying to find her own life. And it's funny for me, as like, I'm a huge shipper. Like, I want these two characters to be in a relationship. I'm one of those, but I still can really, really appreciate the weight of this episode in terms of the character of Scully. And I think it's really, really important, in general for everyone to watch, because it's really well done too. I mean, it's, I don't know. Anyway, she starts dating this guy. I don't even know if I said that. People remember. So she ends up becoming in jeopardy again. But she luckily is able to get herself out of it. I always like when she can kind of get herself out of it, and it doesn't have to be like Mulder rescuing her.
Right, of course. Do you think this, because you're talking about the Scully's, personality coming out in this one, do you think this changes her going forward? Do you think this actually, is there a definitive, she's different after this?
Yeah, I think that she... I don't really know in what way it changes her, but it's certainly like at the very, very last episode, Mulder knows kind of what's happened to her. She's gone through this horrific experience. She's sitting there and he's telling her about the next assignment. And you can tell she's zoning out again. She's not listening. And he's like, oh, is this all because I didn't get you a desk? Because like they had a fight like a few days ago about that she didn't have a desk. And she just says, not everything is about you, Mulder. This is my life. And that's how it ends. Like, it backs up with them just kind of sitting away from each other. And it's kind of like sad. It's kind of just like, oh, well, that's kind of a bummer, but it's realistic. You know, you're watching and you're like, that would happen if you're spending day in, day out with this person. It's natural that he would think everything is about him and that she would want him to know that everything's not about him.
Right.
Yeah. So I just love it.
Technically, I believe this is actually a little bit different than what you thought. Leonard Betts, the cancer one, actually was after the Super Bowl. And so it did end up playing before the Never Alone one, Never Again one.
So Never Again did air after Leonard Betts?
Yeah, so Never Again was actually supposed to air before Leonard Betts. But because it now airs after that, people think it's a part of cancer is actually part of the
you're right. Episode. So I got it mixed up. So yeah, you can, but again, it's still up to the viewer to decide
what they want.
Because I don't think it wasn't intended to be aired that way.
Okay. No, I see what you're
saying. Yeah.
It was intended, I believe, to air before.
Yeah, before. So she wouldn't have known about the cancer in the original airing of it. Yeah. And that's why, and so it's interesting to see how things change even when you don't even, when it's not meant to, but that interpretation of the show is so different now.
Right, and I like that idea too. Like, I can take it that way too. Like, it doesn't have to have anything to do with the cancer. Like, this is just a natural progression of their relationship. Like, she would reach that point where she would just be over it. Like, she would be sick of everything. So,
Totally.
I like it either way.
Yeah.
Oh, and I should mention too that this real quick. This was an episode that was supposed to originally be directed by Quentin Tarantino, mm-hmm. which would have been amazing, I think. But luckily, the episode turned out great, so it doesn't matter. But I really would have been curious to see what Quentin Tarantino would have done with an X-Files episode, and this would have been a perfect one for him. Just like the content would have been great. Yeah.
The tattoo would have come to life and done the Batusi with them and, you know, played some surf guitar, you know.
All right, moving on.
My number five is Clyde Bruckman, which we already talked about.
It's my number five, too, so we can just get that out of the way there.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, then I'm going to bring up Jose Chung's From Outer Space.
Nice.
This is the beginning of a two similar episodes, in my view, where it's sort of, three, because when we saw Field Trip, you also sort of see multiple viewpoints on what reality is. And
I would put all three of those in the same category.
Yeah. And Jose's is good because it's one of those things where it messes with you as a storyteller. It totally relies on unreliable narrators and what things change. And it looks so, and it's humorous because it's so fake at times that you're just like, well, this is ridiculous. I mean, it's got freaking Alex Trebek in it. You know what I mean? Like, what are you, Jesse Ventura? I mean, like, it's fun. It plays with the idea of taking into account who's telling a story and what's happening, and you see things. And I love the moment where, like, they're telling the story about being entrapped in this jail cell with an alien and he's smoking. And then you realize wait a minute, but one of the pilots was always smoking and always said similar things. So you're like, that's actually the pilot in an air. But they don't even say that in the show. Like, the show doesn't actually say that. Yeah, it's a great mind twister fun episode.
This is another one that's probably on lots of people's top 10 lists, and
yeah, and this is another Darren Morgan.
Yeah, for whatever reason, I'm just not as personally attached to it, which is why I didn't pick it for mine.
I've actually rewatched this one recently, and there is a cheese factor that is very, very high, and it was probably hard to watch when it came out.
I recall it having like a pacing issue.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of that. And it's a little bit of like, I think a lot of people were like, what is going on? And I think that in some people's mind, it might have even become sort of the what they worried X-Files was going to become.
Yeah.
In terms of its cheesiness and stuff. Well, and they were doing it on purpose.
Right.
But
I think
that when you watch it the first time, you're like, oh, wait, what is this? Why am I, you know, like, what's happened to this cool show that I liked? So,
well, in my head, that's what they were making fun of.
Exactly. That definitely was. But I think it's hard for somebody watching it for the first time, especially back then, to like be that meta aware of
itself. You have to be in on the joke.
Yeah.
Like, I would never tell somebody who's never seen an episode of The X-Files to watch this one.
Right.
At least right away.
I think if you were already into the show, by the time you got here, you were fine with it. But yeah, so if you were trying to watch it as a one-off or one of a couple you've ever watched, yes, you wouldn't get a good idea of what The X-Files is. But
right. I don't think you'd even get this episode, really.
No. But this is one of those that we kind of talked about before where, writing-wise, they're able to write these wacky episodes in there every once in a while and it still be okay. Although this is one that I think would probably be the most kind of not like the others.
In a way, yeah. I mean, it's certainly the most unique, one of the most unique, I would say.
Yeah.
In tone and in pacing and in storytelling, everything, it's just odd. It's off. I'm not saying in a bad way. I'm just saying.
No, and I like it. It didn't end up on my list because for whatever reason, it just misses. And I don't know why. And maybe it's because of what you're saying, Annie, with maybe it is the pacing or something like that.
Yeah. It's also one of those things that might be even more interesting and fun to talk about in theory than it is to watch.
Yes, I like what they were trying to do, and I think they pulled it off, but they just missed. Something just misses.
Yeah, I think that's a very big possibility. Yeah. And that's, I don't know if I mentioned it, season 3, episode 20. There's another one, my number 3, I think, would be my top of most strange, most X-Files episode of X-Files.
Right.
But we'll get to it.
Number 4. This is where I'm putting Home. Home. Mm.
Well, we all know where that is on my list.
It's coming in at number 4. I think this one is considered the most controversial episode, I guess. I didn't even realize this, but I guess they couldn't air it again. Is that what you were saying, Charlie, before?
Yeah, I believe it wasn't actually broadcast until FX did a marathon of all the episodes. Mm. And that was like 10 years later or something.
Yeah, because the I guess idea about it, there's possibly some rape and incest involved in here. Mm-hmm. Very disturbing episode.
It's not just that. Yeah, okay.
Well, it's just very disturbing. I mean, yes, it was a very disturbing and graphic episode.
Murder, all kinds of bad stuff.
I didn't hear incest the first time, and I was like, no, it's way more than just rape.
Yeah,
he said it. It's basically everything horrible and terrible you can think is in this episode.
And honestly, actually, I almost believe it's not rape in this episode.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I think it's probably consensual.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, because it's one of the many things where in this episode, the mom is sort of providing her sons with things that the sons need.
Right.
And what's interesting about that episode is it's also one of the ones that, along with a couple of other ones, starts to talk on about like how a mother wants to do things for her kids, and it's picked up in a lot of other things, there's this motherhood theme that then ties in with Scully, and I don't know if they knew that going into it or not, but it's interesting because it also seems to start when Jillian is now a mother, so yeah. I don't know if that plays into it or
I didn't know if that was their intent the entire time, even ever to get Scully pregnant, you know, because there's that whole arc later where you find out that her ova were harvested and she has a daughter and, you know, that whole thing. But they definitely wanted to start dropping hints about that. And I think this is the first time they kind of dropped the hint that, oh, maybe that's something Scully wants to do with her life, because you don't even really think about it before because she's so career oriented.
I think the government should get out of the Peacock's business and let them do what they want to do on their property.
Well, they aren't doing what they want to do just on their property. Oh, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Again, Charlie, you've never seen this episode, you said, actually. You've just read the synopsis.
I don't know. I've seen parts of it. Like, no, I wouldn't have seen that. But I've seen parts of it, I think. Or I don't know. Just reading the synopsis, and somehow I have images in my mind that are enough that I'm like, you know what? I'm okay with this.
You've obviously seen it, though, Nick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
I don't think you can put an episode on your list if you haven't seen it. So I'm going to assume this is not on Charlie's list. But there's a scene in here that is just so great and horrifying. The scene with where the sheriff and his wife get murdered. Do you guys know what the scene I'm talking about? There's a...
And they're playing the music.
It's played against the song Wonderful, Wonderful. It's a Johnny Mathis song. It's like a kind of happy, cheerful tune. They should show this in film school because it's such a great scene. It's this horrifying murder, bloody, awful, violent murder happening while this song is being played. And it's just, it's one of those scenes that really, like this entire episode, I think, and I should just say, everybody knows this is my number one. This is my all time favorite. We're talking about it now. This is the episode that, for me, is the most terrifying X-Files episode because it's not an X-File, really. There's nothing here that's supernatural. Right. This is, and they call this home because this is something that could be happening next door to you and you wouldn't even know it.
And it does, yeah.
And yeah, and that's what's truly terrifying about this. It's the X-Files episode because it's terrifying and it's creepy and gross, but like, that's what has happened. This guy, they're like, well, they're on to us. We got to go kill the sheriff. Got to go do what we got to do. It's all about survival instinct. I mean, it's just this episode is just so brilliant. I just think it's so great.
It is. See, and that's my conflict, though, with this particular episode, because it you literally just hit it in the head. Like, it's funny that you, as the biggest X-Files fan I know, could put this one that it's great TV, but it's not X-Files. And yet you put it at the top of your list.
Well, to me, and I've always said this and I always maintain this, the X-Files is about Mulder and Scully. It's not about like aliens and it's not about that to me. Like that's definitely an element. That's what the show is about. But to me, it's about Mulder and Scully. And this episode's got some great Mulder and Scully moments. Like they don't really take over the episode. They're just kind of like, as in most of the great episodes, they're not really like part of the X-File. They're just kind of inserting themselves into it and trying to figure it out. And I think that's when it's its best. And just their interplay with each other, just the way they talk to each other, you know, there's not really anything, I gotta use the word shippy. There's not even anything shippy in this episode that I can think of. Maybe he does make a kind of cute, she does kind of make a cute remark about how he, what his genetic code is like, you know, inferring that maybe she might use his DNA down the road, which she ends up doing, which is kind of cool, like playback. But But yeah, I just think that they're them together with their flashlights in the creepy house, walking around solving mysteries. That's X-Files enough for me. So,
well, I'm kind of reading background as we talk about different episodes. And apparently Johnny Mathis read the screenplay and refused to allow his version to be used. They had to make a cover.
It was a sound alike.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the sound alike sounds exactly like him. So they did a good job.
Wow.
Yeah, which I'm not surprised. And if I were him, I'd probably be pissed that they found somebody that sounded so similar.
One of the things I like about this episode, though, is, and maybe because I haven't watched it, a lot of people don't necessarily talk about it, but to me, one of the interesting things is the fact that the reason they're on this is because one of the sons has had sex with his mother, and she's given birth to a baby that's not good and dies instantly and is very mutated and deformed. And so
it doesn't die instantly. It's alive.
Oh, it's alive, but it's still muted.
It's buried alive.
Okay. So it's buried alive, but it's so mutated that they think it might be like an alien baby or an alien hybrid or something. And that's what brings them out. And to me, that's interesting. And it's just such the beginning part of the episode that by the time you get to the end of it, nobody ever talks about it again.
Right. You've moved so far beyond that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's nothing really else that I can say about it. I do think that by the end of this podcast, Charlie needs to actually sit down and watch it.
I don't want to at this point, you know?
But why?
Because I like
that wonderful, wonderful scene from a piece of paper that you're reading. Like you can't get that. Like you have to see it.
I saw American Psycho. I understand the concept of whatever that's called, placing one song on top of another. You know that. Yeah. They do that all the time with like opera and. James Bonds and all those things.
I'm just saying this is a very, very good example.
No, I understand, but I just like, I'm a guy who I like fun, and that this episode doesn't sound fun.
You could tell this isn't like Charlie's episodes are fun sci-fi concepts.
It's not your cup of tea, but generally it wouldn't be my cup of tea either. This isn't like Nick said, this isn't the kind of thing he would probably expect me to pick as my favorite episode, but I think I just have such an appreciation for how well it's crafted as a piece of film.
No, I understand that.
To go to the top.
And I don't know. The other half of it is, I don't know. It's hard for me to watch something a second time, like I've said before, just because I know how it ends, kind of. And so this would be one of those things where it's like, I wouldn't even get the mystery anymore, you know, as a first time watching it, because I already know what it's about.
Charlie doesn't own DVDs or anything like that. He doesn't watch things again and again.
He doesn't. Yeah, not a multiple viewer. See, I'm totally a multiple viewer. I'm like,
No, it's like I said, first time I've watched this movie in the theater for a second time in so long. It's not even. I can't even really tell you what. I honestly can't even tell you. And maybe some of that's a thrifty thing too. But I don't know.
No, I mean, some people are like that. It's not a thing everybody does. So.
My four is season 7, so an older one, or later one, episode 19. This is only 3 episodes away from the end of David Duchovny on X-Files, and it's called Hollywood AD.
Another written and directed by Duchovny episode.
David Duchovny, and another episode where David Duchovny's girlfriend is in the show.
Yeah. Wife at the time, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, at one point, I believe that weird vampire episode where Scully's not there, I think it's like girlfriend plays one of the vampires or something.
Yeah.
But in this one, Taya Leone is there as Scully because they're making a Hollywood movie. So it's super meta. It's very on top of each other. It's making fun of itself to the highest degree. It's great fun. It's a romp. There's even an actual sort of like mystery part of it, too.
Yeah.
Which is always fun. Yeah.
It's like a real X-File happening. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. I also got to talk. Gary Shandling was playing the actor who was playing Mulder in that movie that they were making.
Well, and Taya Leone obviously playing Scully.
Yeah. 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 And it's perfect because it's 2 seasons after they actually made a movie about X-Files. I mean, like it's great fun. It's comedy. It's interesting. And the whole X-Files in it was also one of the X-Files they pulled up for Mythbusters. Mythbusters did the whole...
Well, it was kind of a whole... It was like the Da Vinci Code, too, right? It was kind of... This essential story was kind of what the Da Vinci Code was about.
Okay.
In a way. To finding me, these hidden Bible passages that didn't exist or weren't supposed to exist, and then the Catholic Church trying to hide it. Like, that was kind of essentially what this was about.
I believe there's a little bit of that, but the main thing for me is the fact that it's supposed to have... Jesus's voice telling Lazarus to rise recorded into the grooves of this bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bowl was being made at the same time, and they think that maybe like a record, it becomes the record kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I guess there is that's the thing that reminds me a lot. I know that there's other of these weird, they do the whole like upside down crucifix thing at the end of this, don't they?
I don't know what you mean.
They make references to an upside down crucifix. And that's a different sect of hidden sect of Christianity kind of thing. Or
there's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff, and it's a lot of fun. So,
I love the split screen with Skinner in the bubble bath.
Yep,
that's my favorite part.
Yep.
I wanted to mention too. You said Duchovny has had his girlfriends in twice. He's actually had his girlfriends in three times because Mimi Rogers played this FBI agent who was actually the only sort of real threat to Mulder and Scully's relationship, and they were dating at the time. I believe too.
Was she the ex-girlfriend of Mulder?
Yeah, she played Diana Fowley, who I guess started the X-Files with him.
Yeah, it was. Is that Fire?
No. That was The End.
Oh, okay.
And I think she was in The Beginning, and then I think she was in Two Fathers and One Son, and then she was also in another one later.
Okay. I believe there's also an ex-girlfriend in the first season. I think Fire has it.
That could be true too. Let's just say he has a habit.
Well, no, an ex-girlfriend of Mulder's, not an ex-girlfriend of David's.
Oh, okay. I was talking about real life girlfriends.
Yeah. No, I know.
But yeah, that is a good, funny episode. I like it. I think it, for me, that episode is more about like great moments than an actual like,
well done
episode. But I get what you're saying. Like, I think Duchovny's actual masterpiece was The Unnatural.
No, I get that.
But that one's a lot of fun. I like that one.
You know, honestly, like I'd have to go back and watch it, to be honest with you. It's really not one. Charlie's brought it up a few times in the past couple of weeks that we've been actually talking here, and I should have went back and watched it by now, but I honestly don't really remember that one.
Well, check it out. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's kind of a goofy episode.
Yeah, it's another one of those you need to have seen the show to make its sense out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's playing with itself, basically. And it's just good fun. Entertainment. There's zombies. You know.
I like, the zombies. I like Scully running back and forth in her high heels showing Tay Leone how to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mentioned that because I saw like in a teaser for the new season that she made a joke about having to run in high heels or something. And I was like, oh, that's they should definitely bring that up. Well, my number four is Dreamland, which we already talked about.
Cool.
Season 6 episode with Michael McKean.
Yeah.
Great.
Good. These episodes are going a little quicker because
we've been on this for a while.
Yeah, number three on my list. This one just recently got on there because I totally forgot about it, and then watched it in season 6 and realized how much I love this one, especially because it has my favorite guest stars on it. Stole Christmas.
I knew you were going to say that.
With Ed Asner and Lily Tomlin.
Yeah.
And it's just a fun episode. It really is. I like how... it's set at Christmas time, at Christmas Eve, going into to investigate this house where couples were dying. A bunch of couples over the years had died in the house together, and so this has that. Would this be kind of a little bit shippy too? Because it was them as a couple.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I mean, but it doesn't have very many moments that are like that. Maybe the end is cute, but like it's more serious kind of. Yeah. And it does have a couple of those things where you see them like their bodies like together in a
right.
In a
that's what I mean. Yeah, it kind of hints towards all that stuff. Yeah. You know, the relationship between them and that they could easily be one of the couples. In my head, anyway, they could easily be one of those couples that stayed there at the mansion and suffered the same fate as the couples before them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, because you watched this recently, right?
Yeah.
They're at the end, isn't like what they're covered in blood and they're like crawling out of the house. Are they playing like Let It Snow, Let It Snow? Like, are they playing like a Christmas song? Because it made me, I don't know why, but I'm thinking of like Die Hard. It made me think of Die Hard, how they ended it with that Let It Snow or something. It was like, again, playing against the action.
Come to mind.
No, not at the end. They didn't play a Christmas song.
I'm not saying they definitely didn't, but I don't remember that being.
I don't know why I remember the image of them kind of up by the stairwell and they're both covered in blood and they're kind of trying to crawl towards the door.
Yeah.
And I remember, I don't know. I could be remembering it wrong, but anyway. But yeah, that's another great.
Yeah, I loved Ed Asner's and Lily Tomlin's performance in there, where they were trying to be these scary things too. And I always loved the shot with when I believe it's Ed Asner that has the bullet hole in his head. Yeah, because he takes off his hat and the camera kind of pans around. And you can see Scully through the bullet hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool visuals, and I like the idea of them kind of running through the house and not, you know, going into different rooms and getting separated. So there's the kind of scary part to it where they're trying to find each other. And you really don't know what's going on either. Because as a viewer, especially the first time, you know, you think they're actually possibly shooting each other. You know, you don't know what's going on.
Well, and it's crazy to say in like 9 seasons of the episodes, I think that actually might be the only episode that's about a haunted house. You know?
Might be, yeah.
Like, you'd think that there would be more haunted house episodes. But nope.
Yeah, and I just like the comedic view of it. So anyway, yeah, good stuff on that one.
All right.
Oh, is it mine? Number 3. This is the one I was talking about. Probably, potentially, the most X-Files episode. X-Cops. Season 7, episode 12. Basically, you're watching an episode of Cops, and it turns into an episode of the X-Files.
This one's great.
Great episode. Lots of fun. The camera, like the whole fact that they're doing it all cop style is great. It's shaky camera. They're interacting with the things. I mean, we were just watching part of it again because I was trying to show my wife this one. And I'm like, this is great. Like, there's one point where they're running to the next thing, and the cameraman tries to get into the car with the Skulder.
I knew that was bound to happen in some
classic.
And they're like, no, you can't do that. Like, he opens the door.
She like shoves him out of the car.
Yeah. And he's like, oh. But then like 10 minutes later, he's in the back of the car with them. But yeah, so like it's a lot of fun. You get a lot of humor. You get a lot of, you know, at one point, when they first realize that it's being taped, Scully's like, hey, pulls Mulder away. And he's like, we're being taped. And he's like, I don't think it's live. She just said shit.
Yeah, no, I think it's the F word, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And
that's actually one of my favorite parts, too.
Great line. And it's fun. It deals with a neat, fun monster. You know,
People don't really remember that. They remember the cops aspect, but a lot of people don't remember that. That was actually a really good X-File. Like, it takes the shape monster of your fear. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, very much. It's how it's just put together so well, I think. And I guess when they made it, they also really didn't, they wanted to pull back all the X-Files parts, like of the captions and but then it starts with this, like, this is actually an episode of X-Files. And you're like, no, that would have, you're like, you could just imagine watching it as a viewer and Cops comes on and you're like, what's going on? This is strange.
Holy shit, it's Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would have been so awesome, but they don't. They have that. And then they even have the actual X-Files credit sequence in it, but a little bit later. But still, you're like, well, why ruin it like that? You know what I mean? Like, if people didn't know by now, then just enjoy the game. Don't, like, totally spell it out for everybody.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. I like that one a lot.
Yeah, it's great fun. It's another comedic one that's fun and you know, because they were both on Fox, so it was sort of like a making fun of the network as well. And
Yeah.
Fox loves to do that anyway with their shows.
Themselves.
But yeah, no, I like going to what Annie kind of said, that if I don't think this would have worked so well if the X-File itself wasn't so fun either.
Right.
If it was just the spoof.
I agree.
It had to be a good X-File where, like, the actual cops are like, what is happening? Like, this is bizarre. And then they have to turn to Mulder and Scully, like, rather than they're just tagging along, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was really well done. And it's funny. It's not one of those you think would be good, but every time I watch that one, I'm reminded that it's so great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, my number three is probably higher on, I know, Charlie's list, maybe Nick's list.
It's probably my number one.
It probably is. Season 6, episode 3, Triangle. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
This used to be actually my very favorite episode, but it's just, I don't know, over time it's just gone down because it just, I don't know, it's a little one note. It's a little one note, but it's a great one note.
I could see that, yeah.
The whole, it's the one where they go back in time, or Mulder gets kind of sucked into this time loop in the Bermuda Triangle, and he ends up on this World War II, right? Two, yeah, there's Nazis.
Yep, Nazis.
Ship, and like you know, he's trying to get out, and there's this sort of alter ego of Scully, and it gets another one of those moments where they like to mess with all the shippers and have him kiss her because it's not really Scully, and it just great camera work, like all these, you know, super long tracking Goodfellas shots that never cut, even like, you know, they have Mulder on the ship and then they have a commercial, and then they have Scully back at the FBI office trying to find Mulder, and then they have a commercial, and then we're back on the ship. Like it's great. It's just, yeah. It's a ride. It's a great ride.
There is, near the end, there's split screen, okay? And there is literally a moment where you're watching the split screen and Mulder is coming down the hallway in the past, one direction, and Scully's coming down the hallway in the other direction, and they switch sides. Oh, is it two Scullies?
Yeah, it's Scully from present day and like alter ego Scully from the past.
But like they, not only do they switch, they like, I believe it's one of those things where if you pause it, you can see them step over, like, you know what I mean? Like it's,
yeah.
It's,
no, I still don't know how they did that shot. Like I, my brain boggles. Like I don't understand now.
It's amazing. Like we were talked about earlier, it was Letterbox. It is the epitome of like movie filmmaking.
Great music.
Yeah, that X-Files got into, especially in that later season.
What's
season
really funny
six.
Is I was reading about that, and the split screen crossing paths thing was actually inspired by Semisonic's closing time video.
I hate that song.
That's where they got their inspiration from.
Fun. But yeah, it's the epitome. It was season six. It was the epitome of just good filmmaking, good storytelling, fun, interesting ideas, but then just the art behind it is so amazing. And
you know what else? I think they seemed to kind of play off the popularity of Titanic because this came out like the year after that.
Yeah. Yeah,
it definitely had the whole
kind of
like love story aboard a ship. Not really love story, but like there's a little element of that, and just the whole thing about being on a ship, and that I feel like they played off that a little bit, and that also probably is why I loved it so much.
And I never actually saw Titanic, so nope.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I was gonna go see it, and then I found out that he got off the ship, and I was like, oh, that's cool, he's gonna get off the ship, I'm okay with that. And then I found out he died, and I was like, nope, never mind.
Oh well.
I was in my like, why do
you're
guys
like
have to...
my 2-year-old and I have to like censor which movies I show her.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So with it's this...
because the ending might upset her.
This episode, I'm just going to say it's my number two.
Oh, there it goes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I just, I think when I first watched it, I mean, this was one of those, I like, honestly, this one stuck in my head more than any other episode for whatever reason. Like this is, if you say X-Files, for some reason I think of this episode. It's just the way it shot. I don't think I appreciated that until a little bit later on, like maybe the second or third time I saw it and really, really appreciated that. I think the first time you saw this, it was just like, wow. But see, yeah. I was more enthralled with the whole history aspect of the thing. And that's what really pushes it up my list. I'm fascinated with like Bermuda Triangle stuff, the whole idea of the Nazis and searching for this like ultimate weapon type thing. Mm-hmm. And see, that was just the other thing is that's fascinated me more and more as the years went on, were the characters, the actors that played two different characters in
like
the same
cameos
story.
of our main guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you see Skinner, you see, and you Skinner helps them out, which is cool because right. like that's what happens in the show. And you see Smoking Man, and like I think Jeffrey Spender's even in there, and like Kirsch, like they're all there.
Yeah, so like it's one of those I almost hate to say I like it because it's kind of cliche to like this one because of the way it's filmed and everything. But it's not just that for me. It's about the history and everything that is involved with this episode.
It is definitely not a hidden jewel. This is not one of those episodes that you know and you like and nobody else does. And it is. I remember, I feel like I read a little bit about this going into it when it aired and then watching it and just being amazed by it when I watch it. Now, I have to be honest. I don't think I've watched it recently in a long time. And so there's probably it might not hold up as well as I wanted it to, but a lot, and the thing that propels it to number one, I think, is a lot of just the raw feeling that I had
number one on
watching
yours,
it the first time. Charlie? Yeah, it's number one on mine.
Yeah. There's lots of moments, Charlie. I think if you rewatch it, you'll notice the flaws. But there's lots of moments where maybe it drags a bit. It's a little bit slow in certain areas, but like you kind of forgive it because they're doing this sort of experimental camera work.
Exactly.
You know, but you'll see what I mean. You should watch it again. I know you're not a rewatcher, but maybe watch it again and see what you think.
This one I would be okay with watching again. You know what I mean? Yeah. For me, number two, because Nick said that was his number two, is Bad Blood, which
Mine
is
too.
Season 5, episode 12. And that sort of takes everything they kind of did with Jose Chung's and sort of takes it to its most comedic, fullest level. It's basically a story about a vampire, or maybe a vampire, I think. But it's told from, you hear the story once from one person, from Mulder, and once from Scully, and they have drastically different interpretations of what was going on. And you sort of see that Rashomon sort of like different viewpoints for different people. And I mean, the way I think I talked about it last week on the other episode is Scully describes this guy and he's all like sexy and charming and stuff. And then when Mulder talks about it, you can totally see his influence of like trying to put down this guy who he thinks might Scully's. Yeah, exactly. So he's like buck toothed and weird looking. And you're just like,
you should mention it's Luke Wilson.
Oh yeah. And it's Luke
we
Wilson.
We know that Scully's right. No,
it's Luke Wilson when Scully tells it. And it's Owen Wilson when Mulder tells it.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
But I like the joke.
That would be fun.
Just making sure everyone knows it's a joke.
Yeah. And it's fun, it's entertaining, and especially when it came out, and I was just sort of, I had just gotten past sort of the idea of unreliable narrator, and I love the tropes of playing with that and those kind of ideas and those books that are written from an unreliable narrator's point of view. And this does such a great job of, I think they should show this episode in like English classes when they're talking about unreliable narrators to show why things are different from different points of view.
It's a perfect, I mean, you're totally right, but it's also, it needs to be mentioned that you have to kind of be an X-Files fan and know Mulder and Scully to really get.
No, I agree with that. I agree. Yeah, it would be a little.
Why they think that of each other. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because it does. Because not only does the Luke play different people, but Mulder and Scully are playing the versions of Mulder or Scully as they see each other, kind of. And it's awesome. I've done some improv, and one of the scenes we used to do is one where we did the scene from three different points of view. Like there'd be three people in the scene and you'd see it one way and then you'd see it the other ways. And it was really an interesting acting challenge because unconsciously or consciously you decide, okay, that character thinks he's the best. So that means everybody else, when you're acting them, you have to act like you're stupid. And that person is always giving you all the best advice because it's that person's point of view. And it was a weird challenge. And I love what they did with it.
Yeah. There are so many great moments. Again, this is another one I would say, this has got a lot of great moments, but it's also a very good episode. My number two too, I just said that, but it's, like the point when Mulder comes in and he's covered in mud because he just, was trailing behind the RV, being dragged by it. But he won't tell Scully what happened. But he decides to just like flop down on her bed because it's the vibrating bed. And he starts laughing. Just like the little moments like that. And then like later when he's kind of completely out of it and he's singing the Shaft theme song, which I'll always remember. And then Scully doing the autopsy like for the fifth time, and she's so bored and she's like, I'm getting really hungry, and like I don't know, there's just so many great moments in this episode.
Yeah, there is.
I was just gonna say real quick, from my chime in about this one, I'm kind of like a of the moment type person, and like so this I think I kind of repopulated my list with a few episodes that I watched again more recently and refreshed.
So this isn't on your list at all, Nick?
It's not on my list. And I'm not saying it doesn't deserve to be there. There were just other ones that I kind of wanted to talk about and wanted on here anyway. And not to say my list is
and you
fake
knew we were both picking this.
Well, I guess so. and not to say my list is fake in any way. Like these are honest 10 episodes that I love. Right. So and honestly, if you asked me 3 months from now, it could be different because, like I said, Annie and I did these lists a year ago or whatever, and it was a little bit different then. And and that one might have been on there at that point. So it's just like a kind of spur of the moment thing. Great episode, though. Thoroughly love it.
Yep, yep. So I think we're at Nick's number two.
No, we're at my number
one. Sorry, number one. Yeah. You're number one.
We're at my number one. Now, here's the thing. This is why I kind of have to say, like I am a kind of spur of the moment type guy, and for some reason,
yeah, because
this is the one I was.
We've already talked about Annie's and my number ones,
right?
Yeah,
right.
So, which means your number one is not on either of our lists.
That is correct.
Yeah. Great.
And it's okay. I always had a fascination with the cigarette smoking man, and I also have a fascination of history, and I love the episode that really combined the two. And this one's Musing of a Cigarette Smoking Man. Mm. Episode 7, season 4. The reason this one's on here is, to me, this was just like, as a person who loves to read about history and things like that, this was just a really fascinating one. I like how they wrote the smoking man into like kind of all these key moments in history.
Yeah.
And it may be cheesy. I don't know.
Because it's not necessarily true.
It's not necessarily
true.
Well,
that's a major part of it. And I believe in the telling of it, at one point they thought it would be true, but then they went, because they did so much with it, they backed off of that. And
are you
made
saying
it,
the writers in real life?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Like, I think originally it was meant to be a little bit more true than it ended up being.
Gotcha.
Because they pulled back from it a little bit and were like, oh, well, let's have them telling I think it's one of the...
Frohickey.
Yeah, it's Frohickey telling this story. So therefore, it's all filtered through him. So that way, if they liked things from it, it could be real. But
exactly.
Then if they didn't, it didn't have to be.
And actually, at the end, I believe he says something like, well, this is what I found in a magazine and I need to verify it or something like that. I like how it's kind of bookended by the smoking man possibly taking out the lone gunman and has a sniper rifle on him. And then at the end, I love the line, I could kill you whenever I please, but not today.
Yeah.
It's just so cool. It's very, you know, smoking man, and I love it's very Forrest Gumpy. In fact, they parody a little bit of Forrest Gump in there at one point.
Yeah, the box of chocolates
where he's sitting on the bench. And I also like how he gets disappointed in it, and you see the humanity of the smoking man as well.
Yeah.
A little bit, because even can be brought down. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea that he just wants to be like a writer.
Right.
And it makes me think of like, okay, well, maybe if Hitler could have just been a painter, then so much horribleness could have been avoided.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because he was a painter.
Right.
But like, I like the idea that, okay, if Smoky Man's book had taken off, maybe he wouldn't have had time to do all this shady shit.
Yeah. And so, you know, the obvious one is they put them in the Kennedy assassination, involve them with that. But I like how it's smaller stuff too, like the Bills not winning the Super Bowl and the Team USA beating the Soviets, and just random crap like that they put them into is very, very funny. So
you know, you're not the only one who would pick this as a favorite episode, but I couldn't in good conscience pick one that like doesn't have Mulder and Scully in it.
No, I get that.
This is a Glenn Morgan episode, and I believe he intended Frohickey to die in the beginning of this episode. I mean, at the end of this episode. But they wouldn't let him do it.
Well, glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, and I don't even remember what the story was, but I heard a story about him, like them having to pretend, like fake a filming of him dying so that way they could, like, I don't know, some crazy thing like that. And so then it disappeared from the Avid or something, you know.
You're saying they filmed him actually getting shot?
No, no, they filmed like some weird thing. I don't know. It was a story I heard somewhere, but they actually it's from I think the X-Files files. So go listen to that, and there's some good stories because I think Camille actually interviews Adam Morgan.
Gotcha.
And they talk about this. So
this would be one of those weird episodes I think Annie was talking about. It's not a monster of the week, but it's not mythology.
Yeah, but it's still kind of related.
It's definitely kind of mythology, but it doesn't actually. Yeah,
we'll call
it
third tier.
Yeah.
Well, because there's a lot of things that happen that aren't like, would you call the episode where Scully finds out she has cancer a mythology episode? You wouldn't.
Absolutely.
You would?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of information in that episode about how she got the cancer and why, and like the other women who had the cancer and all the stuff that was relating to.
Oh, no. Yes. I'm talking about the episode where she finds out that she has it. Yeah.
At the end where the cancer eater guy says, "You have something I need."
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That would fall into like our third tier category because it's a monster of the week, but it certainly has important information.
I do think I have to applaud them for having a lot of episodes that were monsters of the week, but they do at least put one more new thing in it. So it still feels like it's part. You can't completely, like if you were to just take the monsters of the week episode out, you'd still be losing a little bit of nuance.
Some stuff. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we need to canonize a name for those.
I like third tier.
Third tier sounds weird because that, to me, they're more like second tier. But to me, depending on how you look at it, the monster of the week or the other ones are the first or third tier. Right. And so those are those are like bridge episodes or, you know, like.
You could call it a bridge episode or a monstology.
Monstology episode. There you go.
All right. So those are our top tens. Do we have some time to run down some of the ones our listeners submitted?
No. Well, first we have didn't we do it like honorable mention? I liked the Goldberg variant.
A variation.
Yeah. I thought it was a good one. It's about a story about, I thought it was about a kid, but.
Wait, real quick. Honorable mention, we should just say basically off the wall episodes that we really, really like, but have no place on anyone's top 10 list.
This probably would have been on my top 10 list had I thought about it earlier. And had it been what I remembered it, I thought it was about a kid. And
it kind of is.
But the kid doesn't come in until the very, like the last like two thirds of it or something, like the last third of it.
Not really. I thought he was throughout it.
Okay. See, I thought so too. I don't know.
I think the guy's doing it like for the kid, right?
For the kid. Sick. Yeah, exactly. But in my head, the kid was the one with the power, not the guy.
Right.
So I'm remembering it completely wrong. I remember that the kid was famous. Had I remembered who the kid was, I probably that's why it's not on my list. Because it's Shia LaBeouf.
He's the kid? Are you serious?
He's the kid. Yes.
Oh my, no, I have to Google this because I'm not believing you. It is Shia LaBeouf. Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
For some reason, I thought it was.
I just watched this a couple years ago and that didn't even register.
Yeah. I for some reason was thinking it was going to be the kid from The Sixth Sense or something. Like, I remember him and I remember him being famous.
Wow. Oh my God. Shia LaBeouf. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a good episode.
I remember liking that one because that was the one where he made all the cool little, like, what are those machines called?
Rube Goldberg,
the ones that, like, you know, something, it starts a chain reaction, and I like that. I mean, that seems like that was kind of cool.
There, it's good, it's fun. I remember, I believe there's a point in time when they're like, well, if he's so lucky, let's just open up this phone book and we'll figure out where he is.
Yeah,
but then they do that and they point to something and they're like. Let's try again. And they do it a second time. And then, of course, that gets it to where they need to be.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun.
I like the idea of like luck that, you know, it played into in this. That.
Yeah. Yeah. That he was good at luck or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, you know, it is definitely off the wall, but it's certainly not as embarrassing as mine.
Okay. What's yours?
Mine's actually an episode from season 9.
Oh, my gosh. which means
it's a monster of the week, and it's called Improbable. And this is the one, I don't, again, you guys have probably not even seen it because you didn't see any season 9. But this is essentially about...
It's written and directed by Chris Carter.
Yeah, it's about numerology, and it has Burt Reynolds in it. Which, like, that's all you have to know. Like, Burt Reynolds, it's Burt Reynolds, and he's playing God, essentially.
Well, there you go.
It was just wow. Super fun, like, in a season of just dreck. Like, it was just nice to have an episode that was just kind of light and fun, and it had great, like, Italian music, and there was a scene where, like, they're cutting around, and, like, everything is in sync. Like there's three babies that get pushed by, and then there's three birds on the ground, they're pecking, and then, everything's just kind of going at the same rhythm. And I really like that idea. Like, I don't necessarily know if I subscribe to that theory, but I kind of like the idea that there's some sort of rhythm that is going on in the world, that everyone's kind of following it, and like, you can't, and not that the fact that everything's predetermined, but I don't know, this is just a really cool episode. It kind of messes with those themes and makes you think about things. And if, you know, if there is one episode that you watch in season 9 that isn't the others that I listed already, this is just a good fun one to watch. I just think it's really well done, and I actually really liked it.
I think I have to go back and watch it now.
Yeah, check it out. And so, did you think of one, Nick?
Nope, but I vote for Charlie's out of the two of yours.
Well, a lot of people listening is probably like, oh my God, Annie has to turn in her X-Files cred for saying that. But, you know, it's just one of those things that's, like, I don't know, it struck a chord with me. I really liked it.
I remember really probably, liking that one.
It's probably interesting in the middle of a really crappy season.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like that rare, like, oh, that was almost good.
Maybe if that one happened during season 6, I wouldn't have thought so highly of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the fact that it happened in season 9 and, like, it was really, really hurting for, like, a fun, interesting episode, I think that helped it.
Well, and what's weird is, though, when we talk about looking at something, like, because I guess there's this point where they zoom out and the cityscape looks like Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when we did that with the numbers on the floor in, like, season 1 or 2, that turned into Samantha, you're like, this is stupid. What's going on?
Yeah, well, it was stupid and improbable, too. But
well, improbable. There you go.
Exactly. Well, let's read some of these tweets. I'll briefly read some of the... I'm not going to read the actual tweets. I'm just going to read some of the episodes that people brought up and, like, who said them. And then we can talk about them. At Jeff Sarcastic... he mentioned Bad Blood, which we already talked about, but he also mentioned Arcadia. Do you guys remember that one?
Yes.
From season 6. That's the one where they go, Mulder and Scully go undercover as a married couple in like a housing complex.
Yes.
And I loved it because I used to live with my dad. I used to live in like a housing complex, and it is funny how like strict they are with like their stupid rules and stuff about how you have to have your mailbox a certain way. And so I liked the idea that they were messing with that. Like, oh, if you don't follow these rules, you could get killed. Like it's so dumb. Like the idea of it is so dumb, but it works. Like it kind of plays on your fear, and the way they do it, I thought was really well.
Especially at the time it came out, I felt like that gated community type thing was something that was sort of hitting its peak. And so I think it was something in the air, kind of, you know what I mean? Like
probably curious about it. Like, ooh, what goes on in those? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the monster was kind of dumb. It was like just some stupid mud monster.
It was like a golem or something, wasn't it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I don't know. It wasn't the best monster. What a lot of people remember about this episode is like people say it's a really shippy episode because it's like you get all these little moments of Mulder and Scully playing married couple. But I honestly think it's like an anti-shippy episode because the entire time Scully is just like so over him. Like she doesn't want to be there. She doesn't want to be doing this. And he's just kind of making fun of the whole thing. Like he has a lot of great lines and it's a really funny episode, but I would not really consider this like a shippy episode. So I don't know why people say that.
I enjoyed this too. Like you said, you lived in a community. I lived in a whole community, a whole town. No, a city that was the same way because it was one of those cities that was like created by a company that like bought up a whole, sort of like Disney almost.
Celebration.
It's basically
Celebration.
Mine was the city I grew up in was the 70s version of Celebration.
Wow.
And so, yeah, they have the homeowners association literally was like the government. It was, you know, that much. It's crazy.
Well, why don't you read the other tweet? You have one.
All right. I have one from Scorpio 1080, a good friend of ours from the Revolution Diaries podcast back when Revolution was on. And she says, I asked her for her top five because I guess she watches with a group on Friday night, rewatches X-Files. And she said her top five are Home.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. I like her already.
Terms of Endearment.
Okay, we'll get back to that.
Okay, because Bruce Campbell is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Dwayne Barry.
Nice.
Piper Morrow, which is interesting because that's an actual, that's a
mythology.
Mythology.
Well, so episode. Is Dwayne Barry, but.
Yeah. And 731.
That's also another mythology.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Three mythology. Wow.
That's a lot of mythology. Yeah.
Well, we don't have to talk about the mythology because that's a little, but we could talk about Terms of Endearment. Do you guys remember that one?
Not really.
Yeah, that's totally. Like, I don't care for that one.
That's the
the Rosemary's Baby one.
Yeah, okay.
It's I just watched it the other day and I loved it. Like I forgot how good it was. And it's funny because I don't remember liking it. Like when I watched, I would always skip it when I would watch season six because I was just like, oh, I don't like this one. But I watched it. I really liked it. It was good. Like I like the idea that he's playing this devil or this demon. All he wants to do in life is have a normal baby. Like that's all he wants. And then he ends up like, because he has like two wives, like because he keeps basically trying with different women, and the baby's always a demon, and so he always ends up killing the baby, which again is horrible, but like it's just this poor guy just wants a normal baby. And then you find out that one of his wives actually is a demon herself, and so they make a demon baby, but she ends up wanting to keep it, and I don't know, it's like it's so, but it's the way that they lay it out is so cool. And this is another one too, that Scully's not in it very much. It's mainly Mulder, I think. Mm-hmm. And like, he just has some great moments where he's taunting this guy and I don't know. And they also play the garbage song. I'm Only Happy When It Rains.
Yeah.
I'm only happy when
yeah.
it rains.
Well, I don't know. No, I just, I don't have any attachment to this one. It's one I more recently watched. Like I said, I just watched season six and,
wow. Yeah,
I just didn't care for it.
Didn't care for it. I don't know. I wouldn't say I like it. I didn't say I like was being in my top 10 or anything like yeah. that. I remember not liking it. And when I watched it recently, I was like, this is actually really good. I don't know. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I don't know episodes this early by name. So I'm kind of looking them up as you guys say the names. Piper Morrow. That's a good one.
Yeah. She definitely.
Yeah.
It was interesting. She said a couple of them that were like 731, I think, is the middle of a three-parter.
Yeah.
So it's What a strange, interesting choice.
Yeah, I would be interested, Scorpio 1080, that's her name?
Yeah.
I'd be interested if she would write back to let us know why those particular mythology episodes.
Yeah.
Because they're just random and that's interesting to me. Another one at Steve Furman wrote his favorites were War of the, we'll say cockroaches, cup perfectus, which we already talked about. And then also Erlenmeyer Flask. Which is another mythology episode. Yeah. I just think it's interesting people are writing in and saying mythology episodes, although maybe they're picking one monster of the week and one mythology.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
But that's another great mythology one. I think that was one of the ones I told newbies to watch last week.
Yeah.
It just had a lot of great stuff in it. It's a good pick. Season one finale.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. And then at Fun Kelly had a list of five as well. Squeeze, Gender Bender, Jose Chunks, Ice, and Tombs, which are all like season one.
Yeah, yeah, most of them are.
Yeah, or, except Jose Chunks.
Or early. I think Gender Bender isn't necessarily. I think that.
No,
might
I
be
think
two.
Gender Bender is season one. Pretty sure.
Yeah, it is. 14.
All these are season one except Jose Chunks. But like Squeeze and Tombs is like, I don't want to say two-parter, but like Squeeze is the first one with Tombs and then he comes back in Tombs. Like that's actually, that was one of the ones I wanted to put on for, if I had more spots, I would have put it on for people to watch, like new viewers, because it's a great, he's a great monster of the week. Eugene.
And Squeeze is the one that changed the way, not, I mean, X-Files probably knew they were doing this, but Squeeze is the first episode that isn't the big conspiracy episode, really.
Yeah.
And so people are like,
first monster of the week. It's the very first
this,
one.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't about aliens all the time. And I think that without that, it would have been a very weird, different show. So it's great that squeezes in there. And the fact that he then comes back is even cooler.
Yeah, I mean, that they have several. I think they have that. I think Donnie Faster is another one that comes back. He's in Irresistible. And then I think in, what's the one later? Is it Orison? He comes back way later. And then the Pusher guy comes back too.
Yep, Pusher.
I think those are the three ones we see come back. If there are more, somebody let me know. But
well, I think you named four, but you know. That's
did I? Okay. Did you get? You guys remember Gender Bender?
Yeah, I only know it because of the podcast I listen to.
Yeah, which I remember being, I remember being pretty good and interesting because it was like this guy who is like an Amish guy, but he like needs to go get lucky, so he like goes to nightclubs or something. But he can change sexes. Like, it's weird. I don't know. It's really weird. And I remember, too, Krycek, before he was Krycek, had, like, a cameo in this episode. He played, like, he was some dude that got, you know, taken in by this guy. Like, I just remember that.
You mean the actor not as Krycek?
Right. Nick Lay. Oh, wow. Yeah, he just plays a random dude who's in the episode. And you could tell maybe they liked him and they brought him back later to be Krycek. But, like, that's a funny pick. That's a really funny pick. Ice, that's obvious. Great show, great one. Jose Chung, that's pretty obvious too. But yeah, those are pretty good. Those are pretty good tweets. Did you have any more, Charlie? That's all I have.
No, just the one from her.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of good ones. We want you guys to tell us yours too. So maybe we should throw out all the info.
Yeah. You can find us on Twitter. We're at X-Files Diaries. On Facebook, we're X-Files Diaries. If you look at the post that we have that talks about this particular episode, post your list there, and then we can have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
All right. And we are on, if you're not there already, we're on iTunes. So you can go ahead and subscribe to the podcast there. And
just type in X-Files Diaries.
X-Files Diaries. And don't forget to go ahead and leave us some comments there so other people can help other people find the podcast as well if you want to get your friends primed and ready for season 10 of The X-Files. And then,
yeah, if you have a minute and you're on a computer, rate us or leave a comment. It really helps. Really helps.
And then we'll be back with the first episode of season 10 premiering on Sunday the 24th, another episode on the 25th.
Oh, my God, you guys.
We're going to record on the 26th, and then we should.
And Nick's already seen the first episode, so.
A week from today, we all will have seen it.
We all will have seen it.
Can you believe that?
And then on the 27th, Wednesday, we will release the first episode that's going to review season 10. And so we'll incorporate, I'm assuming we'll do one recording that will review the first two episodes.
Yeah.
And then we'll do every Wednesday from there on out throughout the very, very abbreviated season 10.
Yes.
And then we'll see where it goes from there. If you guys like us, we'll stick around.
Yeah, there's always more stuff to talk about with X-Files, but it's up to you guys to let us know what you want to hear about.
Exactly. So you know where to get in touch with us, and we'll see you in about a week from today. Anything else, guys?
No, I'm ready. Nope. I'm pumped.
All right. Well, until next time, everyone, keep searching for the truth.